Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What is a military career like for American women, and what might change now that they are no longer automatically banned from most combat positions? Journalist Tanya Bianc spent 5 years following the personal and professional lives of women in the Army and Marine Corps, and while the trajectories of their careers have been different, all were deeply committed to their work and realistic about the unique sacrifices required of an ambitious woman in institutions long dominated by men. Bianc shares their stories in her new book, Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Servicewomen in Today's Military. Tanya, welcome to Think.
Thanks so much, Chris. Great to be here with you.
First of all, can you give us a sense of how Defense Secretary Panetta's announcement was greeted by women in military careers?
I think it really ran the gamut of emotions and opinions to the women that I spoke with. Some were very excited. They were elated about the news. One said that we've been waiting decades for this to happen. Others were just a little shell-shocked. They couldn't believe that it happened so quickly. They thought it would take several more years to be put into place. And there were also others who were more cautious about the news and a little skeptical of how is this all going to play out and is it going to really work. Mm-hmm. So servicewomen are all individuals, and, yeah. and they all have their own opinions on this.
Why was the ban on combat service considered such a major impediment, at least by women in the service, to career advancement?
Right. I first want to say that I don't think any young woman enters military service thinking that she's going to be held back or is not going to be able to reach her full potential, because many, many servicewomen have had very, very successful careers. My sister, for example, who is an Army colonel and a brigade commander. And before the news broke about this ban being lifted, I had asked her, I said, did you ever feel like you've been held back in your military career? She's been in the Army for 23 years. And she said to me, does it look like I've been held back? That was the answer she gave me. So, to answer your question, this lifting the ban is going to give women more opportunity to advance. If you look at the general officer and flag ranks, 80% of those generals come from the combat arms branches, which have been closed to women. Women make up 14.5% of the force, but they only make up 7% of the general officer ranks. And for your senior enlisted women, they only make up 11% of the ranks. So women, servicewomen are underrepresented at the highest levels in the military.
So, and I recognize that men in the armed forces are as individual as women are, but I wonder if you can talk about the responses that you've heard from men who are actively serving now and whether their sense of this decision is different depending on whether they are enlisted or officers.
Well, I think not so much even enlisted officer, but more so, are they in the combat arms branches, mm-hmm. or are they in support roles, supporting the combat arms branches? Because if you are in a support role, those servicemen have been working side by side with women for their whole careers, and so the major shift is really for the infantrymen, those in the armor, and then you've got your special forces and your ranger regiments, the SEALs, where women have not been able to serve. So though it may be, you may get a different response depending on who you're speaking with, what their job title is. Mm-hmm. But I think especially with the young people who are joining the military, they're the new generation to serve, and I think they are very open to people, whether they're gay, whether they're women. I just think they have a different attitude because times have changed, and they are changing. There's a cultural shift in our nation, and I think in the end, whatever a service person's individual opinion is, in the end, it's not going to really matter because they will have to fall in line. We've got a professional military. It's a professional force, and they're expected to act accordingly and follow orders. And the people to do that will be the leadership, the leaders. They're going to have to implement these changes. And according to the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the military leadership has said it's committed to implementing this change without compromising the mission.
So, Tanya, you grew up around the military. You have loved ones in the service. Talk about how you approached this project and what you expected to learn that you didn't already know from your work as a journalist and simply from having a sister in particular who is a colonel.
Right. Yes, I've as you said, Chris, I've grown up around the military. My dad was in the Army for 30 years. My husband's been in the Army for 23 years. My sister, so her husband's in the Army. So I've always been around it. I've covered the military professionally, and I've always wanted to tell the story of our servicewomen. I knew that professional success in the military often comes at a personal price, both for men and women. But women face their own set of challenges, things that they deal with privately out of public view, and I really wanted to examine that and bring it to the forefront. And because really to be all that you can be, it comes at a price, mm-hmm. especially for women. And I learned a few things. There were a few things that surprised me. I thought I knew a lot about the military already, but I did have a few eye-opening experiences. And one of them is that women tend to be a little harder on other women in the service.
Yeah, I was struck by that, too. And I guess they want to make sure that no one else makes all women look weak. Is that it?
Yes. That is a good point. One represents all of them because they are in a minority. If you look at the Marine Corps especially, there's only about 6 to 7% of females in the Corps. And so especially in the Corps, they tend to police their own. So women make, quote, corrections upon other women if they're not meeting the standard. And yes, no woman or man in the military wants to be labeled as, quote, weak. That's the worst label that you can possibly have, and women are certainly very sensitive with that because many of them believe that they come into a new job with people already believing that they're going to be weak, mm-hmm. unless they have a reputation that precedes them of being really strong and sharp. That's what everyone in the military wants to be known as sharp, because that means that you're sharp in your military bearing, your ability to complete tasks, and your leadership style. And so, yes, women are very, very sensitive, especially successful military women, of this weakness label. And when they see another female who is not mission and task focused, they will definitely let her know about that.
Go ahead.
Well, that was one of the really surprising things, because you think, oh, well, it would be more like a sisterhood. And it is in a way, especially with mentorship, because a lot of women, especially in the junior ranks, they very much could use a female mentor. And as you continue, if you make the military a career, you still need mentors who are above you, and yes, they can be from either gender. But for women, it's always nice that they can have at least one female mentor who truly understands what they're going through.
Yeah, you totally anticipated my question, because I was thinking about mentorship and just that the sense of camaraderie. Is it in the way sometimes families are tough on each other but are there for each other? Is that is that a good parallel?
Yes. Yeah, that's well said. Yes.
My guest is journalist Tanya Bianc. We're talking about her new book, Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Servicewomen in Today's Military. We'll come back to our conversation with Tanya in a few minutes. If you'd like to make a comment, ask a question, share perhaps your own experiences, you can give us a call at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. Before we resume our conversation, though, with Tanya Bianc, wanted to talk to you, give you an update on the status of our winter membership campaign, in particular this challenge that we have going for the 2 hours of Think. We have 88 calls left to go, 88 contributions. It can also be online contributions. 88 contributions left to go in order to make the wonderful challenge grant offered to us by Julia Pendry. That's $1,000 additional dollars to KERA if we can hear from a total of 125 of you with a contribution in any amount during Think today. Jeff Whittington is in studio now. He is senior producer of Think and host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And Julia said she, you know, Think's her favorite show. Thank you so much, Julia. And she wants to make this $1,000 additional gift if we hear from 125 of you during the show today, because Julia feels like KERA helped her become a good citizen of the world. She wants to do the same. You know, you're already a good citizen of the world, but we're talking about people who have not yet discovered themselves, people who may not yet have discovered public radio. Think about the first time you found public radio and what it sounded like to you. And you found this place that spoke to you, gave you the tools you needed to be, as Julia says, a good citizen of the world. Well, that's what we're here for, and that's why we hope that you'll support it. 888-694-6931 is the telephone number. Here it is again slowly, 888-694-6931. And we can thank you with a copy of Tanya Bianc's book, Undaunted, when you join the station today with a $120 contribution. That's $10 a month as a sustaining member. We'd be thrilled to send you a copy of the book. Of course, the book is publishing this next week. Very timely, considering what's happening in the Department of Defense. We would love to be able to thank you with this.
If you recognize Tanya's name, it's because she also wrote the nonfiction book Army Wives that was sort of translated into a fictionalized version in the series that's on the Lifetime channel. And so you may be fans of that. You may have read her work in the past. This new book is really a fascinating piece of work. And I don't think it's not a book that only women will be interested in. I think all of us who owe a debt of gratitude to our service members would be really interested to learn what it's like for women who make this choice to serve their country voluntarily in the armed forces, particularly in light of the recent decision not to continue banning women from all combat positions. You can receive your copy of Undaunted and make a contribution of financial support at the same time when you go online to kera.org or call 1-888-694-6931.
Our goal for Think Today, 125 contributions, 88 contributions left to go, 88 calls or online gifts. Please go to kera.org or call 888-694-6931. Please don't wait any longer. If you've considered supporting the station, please do it today. We'd really love to wrap this membership campaign up by tomorrow evening at the absolute latest, because trust me, I'm not telling Sam Baker he's got to come in here on Saturday. And I don't think you want to either. So please call now, 888-694-6931, or go online to kera.org.
Maybe that's it. If you know you should make a contribution but you haven't done it, we find you and we make you tell Sam.
Yeah, I've already said not it officially and on the air, so no one can make me do
it. We should say Sam is a great sport and
a great guy.
And
we love Sam.
Yes, he does have a deep voice, though. Very intimidating voice,
right,
but
right.
he's a great person. You can make your contribution at kera.org or go online. No, you can make your contribution at kera.org or call 1-888-694-6931. We'll be back in just 2 minutes with Tanya Bianc talking about her book, Undaunted.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. New spring semester personal enrichment and professional development courses are now open and available for registration. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Journalist Tanya Bianc is my guest. Her new book is called Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Servicewomen in Today's Military. Join the conversation by emailing think@kera.org or call us at 1-800-933-5372. So tell us about Marine General Angela Salinas, who has been a trailblazer in multiple ways in the Marine Corps.
Yes, she has been, Chris. General Salinas is the Marine Corps' first female Hispanic general. And I very much wanted to tell the story of a woman general officer because I was looking for an individual who had decades of experience in the military. And in General Salinas' case, when she joined the Marine Corps, as a recruit at Parris Island in 1974, the military that she joined then, right after the draft had ended, is quite different than the military that she's a part of today. And I knew that I wanted to have General Salinas in this book when I heard that she had founded her women's college basketball team, and she was the team captain, despite being only 5 feet tall. That told me something about her character and her determination and her drive and her belief that she could do things that other people probably thought that she could not. And so she took that skill set with her into the Marine Corps after all these years of service, where she was the first woman to hold a number of positions, and oftentimes she was not greeted warmly in those positions. She had to prove herself about the kind of Marine that she was, and she has done that.
I was really interested to read. It's sort of a vexing conundrum. She doesn't happen to be married. Her mother and her sister live with her. But because she doesn't have a wife, which is something that the most general officers, being men, have, there were questions as to whether she was suitable to provide all the kinds of leadership that is required for someone in her position.
Right. Usually, when she would go to a new job and people didn't know her, all they knew about her was that she was a woman and that she wasn't married. And oh, what about the families? What are we going to do? What about the families? And there would be all this talk, and she was aware of that, but she always told me that there's more than one way to get the job done, and although her family was non-traditional, they still got things done. Her sister, who is in her 70s, loves to throw parties, mm-hmm. loves to entertain. Her sister volunteers with the spouse groups. And when her mother now is 98 years old and is suffering from dementia, but there was a time that, you know, her mother was really the one who ran things at home, and so they've been able to do things and to prove to others in the community that you don't have to have a traditional spouse mm-hmm. to keep everything going on the home front.
It is also sort of a shout out to the unsung women who for generations have provided those services for their husbands when the military was entirely made up of men, and all the sort of unpaid labor that someone in the family has to put in.
That's true, and that's actually a topic that I cover in my book, my first book, Army Wide.
Yeah.
Just the important role that these women play in the community.
So one really poignant element for me of General Salinas' story was she's had issues with some chronic pain that caused her to think about, you know, how long can I keep doing this? Talk about the calculations that female service members make when deciding how candid to be about their pain, their physical issues with officials and doctors working with the military.
Right. And Chris, this goes back to what we were talking about before the break about the weakness label, and especially someone of General Salinas' caliber, very, very successful, very driven, strong, strong Marine that she is, when she started suffering from just horrific back pain, knee problems, she had five knee surgeries that started from playing basketball in college. That's where it started. And it reached the point when she, years ago, when she was a lieutenant colonel, she could barely get out of bed or walk from her car to her office. And she reached the point where she decided that she couldn't do this anymore. And she decided that she was actually going to leave the Marines, but she was not going to tell anyone why, because she wanted to leave on her own terms. And so she actually submitted her retirement paperwork, and everyone was shocked. Her boss was shocked, and he refused to put the paperwork in because she had been selected early for promotions. I mean, she was well on her way.
Mm-hmm.
But she never told anyone because she did not want to be labeled as weak. And I guess she didn't think people would fully understand. But obviously, she did not get out of the Marines. She was able to finally get some back surgery so she could get some relief. But even so, now she still works out. She still does extremely well on her PT tests that she has. She's still pushing herself despite the pain. Because keep in mind, most Marines are how old? You know, they're 19,
22,
20,
yeah.
21. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 22 years old, especially when she was commander out in San Diego of the depot out there. All of the recruits were right out of high school, and every Thursday she and her sergeant major led 500 of these young kids on a spirited, you know, 2.5 mile run, and she was the one setting the pace at the front.
Hmm. So when your workforce, even 15% of your workforce, is made up of women, and they are by and large young women, lots of them will be at times in their lives when they want to think about starting a family. I was surprised to read in the account of Army Major Candace O'Brien how long it has taken for things just like getting uniforms made to fit women, not to mention women who happen to be pregnant. Can you talk about that?
Yes, that's true, especially in the Army. The Army still does not have a female uniform, utility uniform, the ACU. That's the one that, if you see pictures from Afghanistan, that they're wearing. They're looking into fielding a female version cut for a female's body, but right now they don't have that. And I remember, Chris, a funny story. I remember asking my sister, I said, well, you know, how do you feel about wearing a man's uniform to work every day? And she said, you know, I've always thought of it as being a unisex uniform. But I loved her answer because it told me something about my sister that to her, she has every right to serve in the military and to be in places that perhaps maybe, you know, not everyone is thrilled of where she's serving. But yes, yes, the maternity uniforms for the military can be very difficult to get if you are serving in places like Hawaii, like Major O'Brien was, or if you're serving in places like Alaska or overseas in Europe. It can be very difficult to keep those kinds of things in stock. And a lot of service women like Major O'Brien can't stand the look of these uniforms because they feel that they don't look professional in them. And it was interesting with Major O'Brien when she was pregnant and she was in command, company command, and she was down at the motor pool, and she could tell that her male soldiers felt very awkward around her when she was 8 months pregnant. And to diffuse that, she would say, "Hey, I'm growing an American citizen in here. What have you done for your country today?" And that would just kind of cut the tension.
Yeah. Well, and she was part of a dual military couple at the time that you were following her for this story. And, you know, no one would say to a man, there's no problem if a man is expecting a child, but obviously the woman is carrying the child. It presents pretty significant issues, though, for a woman who is on active duty.
It does, especially like Major O'Brien. She's an intelligence officer, and she was commanding in an infantry division. And so that it was very, very difficult for her. One of her platoon sergeants from years ago told her, "Don't get pregnant while you're in command. Just don't do it." And she took that advice to heart. Mm-hmm. But her command ended up getting extended. And so after her deployment to Afghanistan, she thought she was going to be leaving command. She thought it was, you know, military women who want to have children are always looking for the perfect window of opportunity within their career to do it. And Candace thought she had found that opportunity. She was leaving command. So she had a plan. She always had a plan in place. And so the first half of her plan worked great. She got pregnant. And then she found out that her command was going to be extended, and she realized with horror that she was going to be in command for her entire pregnancy. Mm. And she ended up, when she gave up command, she then gave birth the next day. And so it was quite a trial for her.
My guest is journalist Tanya Bianc. Her new book is called Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Servicewomen in Today's Military. You can join the conversation by calling in to 1-800-933-5372, or you can email us at think@kera.org. We will speak more with Tanya in a few minutes, and if you would like to read a copy of her book at the same time that you support KERA, we would love to send you a copy as a thank you with a contribution of $10 a month or more. You can do that at kera.org online, or you can call in to 1-888-694-6931. I want to remind our podcast listeners, if you are time shifting this, we do still have folks on duty. I promise you, no matter what time you want to call, we have folks on duty, and of course the website is always there. So if you listen and you think, I really should make a contribution to this station, even if you are outside, you know, the North Texas area, but you listen to this show every day, we would greatly appreciate a contribution in any amount, and you can do that now at kera.org. Jeff Whittington is back now, and Jeff, you have some happy sheets of people we can say thank you to.
Happy sheets with happy names and happy people who are awesome people. Alyssa Burke in Jacksonville, Texas has supported the station during the show today. Thank you so much, Alyssa. Becky Mayad in Dallas, thank you so much, Becky. Recognize that name. Philip Goss in Dallas as well. Temple Ashmore in Dallas. I also heard from Polly Gessel in Dallas. Thank you so much, Polly. And Mark and Cheryl Dennehy in Irving. Dolly and Graham Sevier in Dallas, or perhaps it's Sevier. And Bonnie and John Oldekamp in Coppell. Wow, thank you so much to each and every one of you. You have gotten us just to 84 contributions left to go to make this goal this hour. We've got to hear from 84 more of you with a contribution at any amount. If some of you have already given, if you've already given during the drive, or maybe you gave in the fall, and you can make an additional gift of $5, $10, or $20, that would be great right now, because that would count toward this challenge. We have a challenge on the table from Julia Pendry, who will donate an additional $1,000 to KERA if we hear from 125 of you.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number, or you can go online at kera.org. Jeff, I think I may have talked about this before, but when I think about the decision to make a contribution to a station like KERA, I think about meeting up at a friend's house for dinner with our extended group of friends. We all get together and we bring our kids, and everybody brings something, right? You know, I'll bring some hummus, and you bring a cake, and you bring drinks. Right. And, you know, if one time you didn't have time before work. No one's going to say anything if you don't bring anything. But time after time, you would hate to show up and always be that person at the party who doesn't bring anything to the party. And you don't do it because you have to. You do it because you really enjoy socializing in this way. You enjoy the value of being together with your friends, and you want to be a contributor. You want to be like everyone else. I think it's the same thing with becoming a KERA member. We understand that some of you may be in a position where it is impossible right now. The true story is, if you think about it, a lot of you are certainly in a position to do $5 a month or $10 a month. The amount is really up to you, but your contribution does matter. And the way public radio works, or is supposed to work, it doesn't work exactly this way. It's supposed to be that quite literally everyone who listens on a regular basis makes a small contribution every year and keeps it going.
Right.
It turns out to be only a special select few, but we would ask that you join the select few because this is a service that you would hate to have to live without.
By the way, this isn't really for on the air, but if I don't tell you right now, I'll forget. I made those copies of the membership form for you to take to that dinner party Friday night you asked me about. I put them in your mailbox.
That's fantastic. I have to go after a couple of people.
Right. So the number for you to call to fill out the membership form is 888-694-6931. Or you can do it online at KERA.org.
No one's going to come to my party now.
Is it? It's a party. It sounds like a real party, too.
It's a pledge party.
Where Chris practices her pledge pitch on you. Could you imagine? We have not figured out yet how to approach you face to face.
If we were at a party with you and Jeff and I came up to you and talked to you about the value of our work and you said, oh my gosh, of course I listen every day. I feel like Sam Baker wakes me up in the morning and the day is never complete unless I listen to Fresh Air in the evening. And then we said, hey, would you mind? Could you do $10 right now and $10 on the first of every month for the next year? You would have a hard time saying no. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think probably. I mean, the analogy I always make is if we had a big theater where all the people listening, you know, if we had
passing
a place
the hat.
Yeah, if we had a place that held, you know, like a mega public radio stadium that held 400,000 people, and we could get everybody who listens every week in that big place, and we asked the people who stood up.
Some of you would run for the bathrooms.
Right. If people please stand up if you make a contribution. Well, they're you know, fewer than. Like it's less than 1 in 10 listeners who actually support the station and would stand up. But I think some of you would stand on up and make your contribution.
Especially,
because
yeah.
you see all the other people that are making this station possible for you.
And you and I and BJ Austin and Shelley Koffler would be running through the aisles distributing Think mugs and
right.
copies of Undaunted by Tanya Bianc and
Downton
Abbey DVDs.
At the $120 membership level.
At the $240 right. membership level. Your contribution really does matter. I mean, we're being kind of silly about it, but it's dead serious that we make this station work on your dollars.
But Chris is available for your dinner party to make the pledge
and
spiel.
And harass your friends.
Just email us at think@kera.org or call 888-694-6931. It's probably better if you just give and support. You don't want us coming to your dinner party and making the pledge spiel to your guests. Just go online to kera.org, make your contribution so we can get this drive over with as soon as possible. And don't forget, Tanya Bianc's book, Undaunted, is available with a contribution of just $10 a month.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. New spring semester personal enrichment and professional development courses are now open and available for registration. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with journalist Tanya Bianc, author of the new book Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Servicewomen in Today's Military. Join us at 1-800-933-5372. So when you are telling the story of Amy Stokely, who's a Marine drill sergeant, you explore this weird dichotomy of how military women tend to be judged for spending their free time. If they hang out exclusively with the other women, they are all assumed to be lesbians, whether or not that's the case. If they hang out with the guys, they are often assumed to be promiscuous.
That is true. And also, if they just keep their private life to themselves, they're also labeled as a lesbian. People are still going to come up with stories, rumors, and gossip. And it's unfortunate because it's a double standard, because this does not, these labels, these discriminatory labels, do not apply to servicemen. If you are quiet and just and don't go out with the guys, then people just say, oh, you know, you're just a bachelor. If you do go out on a Friday night and raise you-know-what, then all the guys think that's just, you know, great, that you're a party animal, that you're a ladies' man, what have you. But that those do not apply to women.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very tough.
And
very
I guess
tough.
The military is not like a lot of other jobs where you really are not required to have... I mean, in some deployments, there is no separating from the people you're serving with. You're going to see them a lot.
You are, and that's one of the reasons that there's always lots of rumors and gossip and, you know, people getting sick of each other because you spend all this time together at work together, and then your free time, you're with each other again. It could be maybe too much of a good thing sometimes.
The dedication that all of these women have, and I realize they are just four, but they seem to be good examples of military women. It's extraordinary in all cases, but I want to talk about Second Lieutenant Bergen Flanagan. She lost a leg in Afghanistan to an IED and had no interest in leaving the Army.
That's right. And before I answer that question, Chris, I just want to say that the four women, one of the reasons that I picked these four women is because I believe that their stories and what they go through are really emblematic of what so many service women experience. But yes, Lieutenant Flanagan was a platoon leader in Afghanistan. Her story in the book actually starts much earlier when she is a college cadet. And she chose to serve in the military police corps. And she chose the military police because she believed it was the closest that she could be to the combat arms branches. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about her soldiers in Afghanistan, all young soldiers, early 20s, is that it didn't matter to them that she was a woman. What mattered to them was, could she do her job well as the platoon leader? They all knew they were going to be in a very dangerous situation in Kandahar. And Lieutenant Flanagan and her two squads, which made up her platoon, were on daily patrols. She was always with one of her squads out on patrol, either on foot or in a vehicle. Extremely dangerous situation. And 3 days before she was supposed to go home, she and her husband also served in the same military police company. 3 days before they're going to have their R&R, she was on a foot patrol with one of her squads, and there was an IED that was remote controlled, and it was so basically someone saw her. Someone was waiting for her to walk by.
It was an ambush, essentially.
That is what they believe. They believe she was targeted. Lieutenant Flanagan has wondered, was it because she was a female? She had had some issues in that culture, dealing with some of the locals. She was not well liked because she was a woman in charge. She was the platoon leader, and her squad also saw someone filming what had happened up above. And unfortunately, they were not able to get him. But the amazing thing about Lieutenant Flanagan is that she, after spending a year and a half at Walter Reed, more than 20 surgeries, fighting infection after infection, she was, first of all, determined to be there at Fort Stewart, Georgia, when her platoon arrived back from their deployment from Afghanistan, and she was determined to be standing when they did that. And she did do that through much pain and grit. She was able to do that. And today I'm proud to say that Lieutenant Flanagan is Captain Flanagan, and her dream is to command a military police company. I think she's going to be able to do that.
There's a great scene in the book where she's still dealing with her prosthesis, and her mother is there because she's still quite a young woman when all of this is taking place. What, is she about 25 now?
Yes.
Okay. So it's completely human, and it's a moment we can all relate to. Her mom is trying to sort of help her get into her uniform, and she's like, "It doesn't look right. You got to make it look right." And I don't know. There's something about that I found very touching.
It was this. Lieutenant Flanagan was still at Walter Reed, but she was given a few days permission to go home to her hometown of Tupper Lake, New York, for the Memorial Day ceremony where she was going to be honored. And she wanted, it was important for Lieutenant Flanagan to go back home to be at that ceremony because she wanted to say thank you to everybody for their support, and she wanted to show them that she was okay, even though inside she really wasn't okay, Chris, but... Mm. This is the kind of women that serve in uniform are, and very tough, very driven. And so her mother is trying to help her get into her uniform for the first time since she lost her leg. And and of course, it doesn't look right. It doesn't fit right. And she keeps saying to her mom, "Mama, make it look right. It doesn't look right." And I mean, bless her mother's heart, you know, she's trying, and then the tears start coming down Lieutenant Flanagan's face, and she thinks that she's never going to, she thinks that's the last time she is ever going to wear her uniform.
Hmm. But it's wonderful to know that it didn't happen that way
that's
for her.
That's right, yes.
I want to ask you, Tanya, about how Army wives feel about women in combat, women deployed with their husbands. And I recognize fully that there are Army husbands as well out there who are civilian workers. But is there a particular sentiment? Do women with husbands in the Army welcome the presence of women in combat?
Oh, I think so. I mean, when I lived at Fort Stewart, Georgia, we lived on post. And many of our neighbors were dual military, where the husband and wife were both serving. There's actually one couple where the husband and wife both deployed at the same time.
Wow.
My entire neighborhood was deployed to Iraq. So all of the families, we were all left back dealing with the same set of emotions. And there were several of our neighbors where the wives were also deployed, and in some cases the husband was not in the service, and he was trying to keep, you know, all the balls in the air, on the home front. And so I think we really work hand in hand in the military community, and we recognize that you're not always going to have, you know, the traditional military family where the husband is the only one serving.
Given what you have learned, is a military career one that you would recommend to women without any more reservations than to young men?
I think so, yes. I have a little 16-month-old daughter, and I also have a son who is 6 years old. And I'm going to raise my daughter the same way I'm raising my son, to be independent and to understand that if you want to follow your dreams, that there's going to be a lot of hard work and sacrifice involved in that. And, you know, whatever little Violet wants to do and become, you know, we're going to let her know that her parents support her in that, including if she wants to join the military.
The new book by journalist Tanya Bianc is called Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Servicewomen in Today's Military. Tanya, really interesting insights. Thank you so much for spending this hour with us.
Thank you, Chris. I very much enjoyed it.
Thanks to all of you listening today. Thanks especially to those of you who are working with us on this goal we have of 125 contributions during the 2 hours of Think. We have several minutes left to go. That is plenty of time to make our goal for the challenge grant of 125 contributions. You can make yours now and help us chip away at that number. Remember, if we meet it, then we will receive from Julia Pendry an additional $1,000. That's a challenge. Julia is trying trying to use her contribution to the station to inspire you to make a contribution, essentially saying, look, if I can give $1,000, you can give $5 or $10 or $20 a month. And this will help all of us to know that the radio station we count on every single day is strong and robust and available to serve the North Texas community. Jump online now at kera.org to make your contribution, or go to 1-888-694-6931. Speak with one of our volunteers. If you want to read Tanya Bianc's book, Undaunted, you can receive a copy as a thank you gift with a contribution at or above the $10 a month level. Jeff Whittington is back once again in the studio. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. I want to thank Dr. Laura Martin in Wichita Falls, Risa and Jay Bender in Bartonville, Ellen and Michael Robinson, who called or joined online from the Colony. Also, thanks to Dr. David Garrison in Plano, Leanne Dugan in Plano, Jason Shipley in Denton. Hey, these folks, we're not just thanking them randomly. We're thanking them because they called 888-694-6931, or they contributed online at kera.org.
Thank you so much, Amelia Harrell in Tyler and John and Suzanne back in Granbury. We also appreciate Andrea Bryant in Fort Worth. And thank you so much, Ann Hines in Dallas and Mason Custard in Dallas. Thanks also, Matt and Jennifer Ludlam in Flower Mound. Really appreciate you, not just your contribution of money, but taking the time. Sometimes that's the big impediment. Like if you could do a genie blink and the money was already assigned, you would do it. The good news is our fundraising folks have done just about everything possible to streamline the process. If you go online and you're used to ordering things online, you can probably be in and out off our website within about 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. Maybe a phone call takes three. So that should not stop you right now. We would really appreciate you getting in touch with us and making your contribution at kera.org or 1-888-694-6931.
Looking for 79 more contributions to make this challenge by 2 o'clock. We have the capacity to take your call. Perhaps you haven't heard yet about the Downton Abbey DVDs that we're offering. If you're a fan of Downton Abbey, it's the blockbuster masterpiece PBS series that's been airing for a couple of years now. We're in season 3. Those of us who watch the show, those of you who watch the show, you're familiar with it. Well, we will give you not just season 3, the currently airing season, but season 2 and season 1. 3 seasons of Downton Abbey on DVD for you and or for a friend or for you to share with someone else when you join the station with a contribution of $20 a month. Just $20 a month, you get all 3 seasons of Downton Abbey for your DVD library, and you also get a whole year of guilt-free listening to KERA, knowing that every time you hear something you like, every time you hear a conversation or a story or something that piques your interest or makes you smile or makes you think or makes you worry, you can say, you know what, I help pay for that coverage. I help pay for that.
And set up a sustaining membership, and it is forever guilt-free. You can always just feel happy and satisfied and comfortable in the knowledge that your dollars are supporting a resource that you think is important in North Texas. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also go to kera.org online. Remember, too, that, you know, hopefully there's only a day or maybe two to wait before we find out who wins the big trip to Washington, D.C.
That's right.
Visit to the Diane Rehm studios at WAMU. And, of course, WAMU is a station across town from NPR headquarters, which you will also visit to witness a production of either Morning Edition or All Things Considered, depending on what time of day you like to get up when you're on vacation. Someone who has been in touch with us during this fundraising campaign is going to win that trip. You have a shot. You know, we will put your name in when you get in touch with us at kera.org or 1-888-694-6931.
Yeah, it's 3 nights in D.C. with airfare. Sitting in on the Diane Rehm Show, as Chris said, seeing either Morning Edition or All Things Considered as it is produced live. What an opportunity for some lucky public radio listener. It could be you. Call us, 888-694-6931. Again, make that $20 a month contribution, and you can receive all 3 seasons of Downton Abbey, Season 1, Season 2, and the currently running season, Season 3. It's $240 contribution all at once, or do it as a sustaining member, and it's just $20 a month in support of your public radio station, KERA. I've got to say, people have really been responding to this. Many of your fellow listeners have taken advantage of this Downton Abbey. And hey, you know what? If you've seen it, but your mom or dad are just getting into it, you know what? They probably haven't seen it all. This would be a great way to say, hey, you know, I know you love Downton Abbey, Mom. Here's season one, disc one. And when you're done with that, I'll loan you
if
season
you're good.
One, disc two.
You might be able to get people to do all sorts of things for you that you've wanted done for some time. KERA.org is our website. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can make a contribution in any amount. The average gift is somewhere around $120 a year or $10 a month. But, you know, maybe for you it's 10 times that. Maybe for you it's half that. You can make that decision. We do ask that you make a contribution in some amount now. Support the station, support quality journalism at KERA.org.
Or call 888-694-6931. Again, that's 888-694-6931. Once again, want to thank Julia Pendry for her very generous challenge grant. Thanks so much, Julia, for your support of KERA and for motivating the folks that we've heard from so far, hopefully motivating you to call right now.
888-694-6931 or online anytime at KERA.org. Thank you so much.